Good afternoon. I'm going to ask you, first of all, to bear with me. I was planning on about 16. I was going to cheat and go 1 minute over. I've got a lot of video, but I'll just scan through it really fast and give you an idea. No disclosures. This is a problem with Latina colon cancer. Late stage detection is a big deal. Low screening rates. Characteristics of the population: low income, low education, medically underserved, etc. I'm going to read it to you. And these are the challenges we face. We need to address the disparities, increase rates. The way we can do that, and the only way we can do that, is to increase early stage detection and thereby increase survival. We set out to find an effective way to communicate the importance of screening and early detection to a low literacy, low income population. We understand that there's a lot of barriers in that population. We thought that in addition to the standard barriers, there's always personal barriers. We find in the literature that a lot of Latinos, particularly low-income, low-literacy, do not perceive themselves as susceptible. Another big one is that they don't think it's curable. The reason for that we found in some of our work is that there's a lot of cancer mortality in our community. Every single focus group we've done for the last 10, 12 years, we ask individuals when we do cancer work, how many of your family members, how many close friends have you known that have had cancer and not survived? And there's always a presence of that. So, the personal experience is very important. We can't overwrite that with, whatever information we present. So that's very important. We pay attention to that. The literature talks about something being cultural with Latinos and Latinas and not getting checked. As we examine that, we share with them different, this study, that study says that this is why you don't get screened. Is that the way it seems to you in your world? And frequently we hear, no, that's not it at all. They don't get it. What it is I'm so busy, we're keep putting it off. This idea, we're negligent. It's not that we don't want to, not that we don't know how to do it or where to go. We just don't have the time. We'll do it later, maybe when there's more money. I'm healthy right now, again, susceptibility. So we wanted to find a way to deliver an intervention that overcomes all of those barriers. In addition to that, it increases comprehension. We believe very strongly in educating and empowering individuals to make informed decisions about their health. And in doing so, we think we can promote screening and risk reduction behaviors. So these are our design goals. We set out to design an intervention that, of course, was culturally and linguistically appropriate. We wanted to make sure it was cognitively accessible, that they would get it, they would understand it. And the approach there, and I'll show you, we didn't dumb down the information, but we wanted to make sure that we presented it in different ways, in different media, so that it would be comprehensible. We're using technology, and we wanted to make sure the technology was totally intuitive. Spent a lot of time putting a lot of thought and intelligence into the way we designed the content and the navigation, so it was intuitive. And the technology is transparent. People don't know or care that they're using a touchscreen kiosk that costs thousands of dollars. So we tested that and we found that we'd hit upon a way to do that. We chose a delivery platform as a multimedia digital touchscreen kiosks. Touchscreens do not require any kind of computer literacy. They don't require any kind of keyboard or mouse skills. They can just touch a screen and the information is there at their hands, at their disposal. So that we thought that that would be a good way to go. We also designed the intervention and we used the kiosk to make the intervention self-paced. So the individual can navigate at their own speed, can come back, check things, redo things, spend as much time or as little time as they want. We thought it was important to have an individualized experience and a kiosk allows us to do that. It's a one-on-one experience. We use a lot of media, and I'll show you some of that, that shows the design that we used to engage the learner. And we tailor the information to the individual. Because we're dealing with Latinos, we give them the option to go English or Spanish. We're dealing with men and women, and so forth. So there's ways that we can use the technology to tailor those messages. And I've already talked about navigation needs. We spend a lot of time making sure that indeed, you know, we present information that people could use. So go through it and find information that they want. The benefits, of course, are improved screening rates. And that is, for us, the gold standard. You know, we can have really a cool intervention that they like and so forth. We can do a lot of outreach. But if it doesn't change screening rates, we will feel it's not successful. The kiosk allows us to deliver a message with great fidelity from one session to the next session to the next week to the next month and so forth. And that was a real benefit to us. Because we're dealing with health disparities, we didn't want to develop an intervention that worked really great in California, but we couldn't use anywhere else. We wanted to make sure we used technology that you could just pack up and drive down or ship down somewhere else, plug it in, and there you go. You've got an intervention that works. Also cost accessible. We spent thousands and thousands of dollars thanks to an NIH grant. But someone can get the technology and use it at a relatively inexpensive rates. So anyway, to us, part of the design was let's get something that worked, let's get something that can really have a meaningful impact on screening rates, not only in our study, but throughout the country, can be deployed, disseminated, and replicated elsewhere. our kiosks, and I'm saying the same thing over again, but we wanted to engage a learner, and we wanted to tailor the messages, we wanted to use behavioral models. When you look at the literature on cognition and learning, these are big things. You know, if you don't engage a learner, if they don't think it's relevant or germane to them, if you can't tailor it to them, and if they can indeed identify and the message resonates with them, there's a good chance that the information is going to stick and that they'll do something with it. So we didn't get intros, but I'm a behavioral scientist, paid a lot of attention. My specialty was health communication, so of course paid a lot of attention to how we communicate the information. Also, I want to say that although we use a lot of technology, it's not driven by technology, it's driven by the patient's needs. I've already told you about that. This is an idea of some of the content in the actual intervention. Motion graphics is an industry term for animation. We all, the rest of us, call it animation. So we use full motion video, digital video. We use motion graphics. We use a lot of text. We use a lot of voice and music and special effects. Every time we use voice, every time we use text, we have it voiced over so that if a person does not have really strong literacy skills, reading skills, they'll still get the information, whether it's in text or audio. So we're working with different channels available to us to do that. So we wanted to hit away at the risk perception and risk susceptibility. We know those are low. We wanted to find ways to present our intervention messages in a way that really hit on that. I've already talked about the belief, the widespread belief that cancer is incurable. We wanted to have our intervention speak to that in a very clear, concise, and realistic way. And I mentioned also the thing about putting it off and being neglectful, the desidia in Spanish. We wanted to hit at that.
The colorectal system is part of the digestive tract, where our bodies break down food, absorb nutrients and water, and store waste products from the digestive process. It is an area of the large intestine that includes the colon and the rectum. Waste from the digestive process moves from the colon to the rectum and passes out of the body. Colorectal cancer is a disease in which normal cells in the inner lining of the colon or rectum fail to reproduce normally. They produce abnormal growths called polyps, which develop into cancerous tumors that interfere with the normal function of the body and may spread to other parts of the body. Colorectal cancer develops slowly over time. Sometimes it takes 10 to 20 years for polyps to become cancerous. In the early stages, colon cancer often does not have any symptoms or pain. By the time symptoms show up, it may mean that it has advanced and may have spread. Regular screening is the best way to catch colon cancer at an early stage, before it develops and spreads. Colorectal cancer refers to the cancer of the colon and rectum.
In the interest of time, I'm going to move along to another example.
My wife complained that sat down with a pain hitter. She kept saying it would get better in a few days, but it didn't. It kept getting worse, to the point where it would interrupt when she was cooking or eating, or even when she was sitting down knitting while watching her favorite novella. I wanted her to go to the doctor for a checkup, but she insisted that she would get better soon and kept saying it was an expense we couldn't afford. I loved her so much that I always let her have her way. I'm proud that we never argued or raised our voice, even though all couples have their disagreements. In a matter of weeks, the pain grew worse and she was bleeding in her stool. This frightened her and scared me too. When she turned me, that's when I put my foot down and I insisted she see a doctor. But it was too late. They found she had colon cancer. And it was pretty far along. They couldn't operate because it had spread to her liver and her stomach. They gave her treatments, but she didn't last long. She went fast, and it was a few months and she was gone. I now wish I had loved her enough not to let her have her way. I should have insisted she see a doctor. I should have done more, but I didn't. I don't have the love of my life with me anymore.
I know you should get checked for colon cancer after you reach 50, but I was too busy working and providing for my family. My family needed me there to make sure we had everything we needed. It was important for me to be a good provider.
I'm going to have to interrupt, sorry. I've been given a 2-minute warning, so you know what that means. Here he talks about an experiment. These are all real situations that we learn from either an individual or the amalgam of them through our formative research. So we try to play back real situations. And in this particular case, you know, the man was very busy working for his family, didn't have time. And then he was diagnosed. And that image disappears from the screen. You hear his voice saying, I wish I was still around. I wish I'd have gone so I would have more time now to be with my family. So trading time now for time later is a message we're trying to get across. Here's a couple, the woman's sister, her best friend died of colon cancer and she'd never been checked and so forth. So a big reality call and a wake-up call for these folks. And they talk about how they feel and we should talk about it and understand it and make some decisions about it. Anyway, these are the characteristics of the sample we used. No significant difference in treatment and control group. These are indeed low-income folks. I won't go through any of those characteristics. The handout that I gave you has the same information. It also has this information. We didn't find as much knowledge gain in this study as we have in other kiosk studies we've done in breast and cervical cancer, but we did find a very significant change in behavior between the control and the intervention group. So when we went beyond significance and we asked an attribution question, to what extent at the kiosk was there something in it specifically that led you to adopt that behavior, that screening behavior? And we found that 47.8% of the individuals, almost half of them, that's a pretty good size effect size. You can take that to the bank. For the treatment control group, rather, we used the CDC Screen for Life brochure. That was pretty effective. It had about 32%, 1 out of 3 or so that read it in the context of our study went out and got screened. So not bad effects. Thank you.